This is Understanding Money and I am Owen McGee. Welcome to this week's episode. This episode's a little bit different. One of the things we did in episode 10 of season 1 was one of the questions we got in was from Anya. And Anya was great. Want to listen back to it, go back and have a listen back to it. But she was brilliant. She went on for about 3 minutes and we got a real insight into her life. And we're going to be joined by Anya today because I said on that episode, I want her on the show. And we're going to be joined by her because that's something in general we like to do. We want to talk to real people like you on this show. We want to hear your story. We want to hear your struggles and your successes when it comes to finances. And that's what the discussion with Anya was all about today. Talking to Anya for me was just about, let's see where she wants to bring it. And let's just jump in. Let's see where she does want to bring it. Anya, thanks a million for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time out. You're on lunch at the moment, is that right?
I'm on my lunch break.
You're on your lunch break.
Very productive, yes.
Excellent. Okay, so there was a specific reason why we wanted to bring you back on. For those people who don't remember, Anya was probably one of the standout stars of season one. Episode 10, season one, Anya came on with a question and it was a long question and it was an entertaining question and we got lots of pockets of Anya's life and I kind of went, I want Anya to come on the show. So today is the day Anya's coming on the show. So you're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Owen. It's a privilege.
And what I would say is the reason why I think your question that time just covered so many different areas, right? And we got to know about the family history of finances. We got to know about how you and your husband, isn't that right, interact around money. And we also got
I had for my breakfast.
Yeah, you did. And it was great. And it gave us an insight. But I just thought there was so much on it. And I thought the way you delivered it was great as well. And I just wanted to talk to you. Tell me, what keeps you awake at night about money?
I suppose I think I'm good, but I guess when I started talking that time, I realized I'm not. And I know we don't call it the rainy day. I suppose I think about my future a lot, so much so that I think I'm forgetting about the present.
Okay.
You know, I'm really all about planning for the future.
Okay.
And I'm just at a really busy stage in my life and I'm kind of going, I don't think I'm missing out per se, but I'm just conscious of the future a lot more than the present maybe. And I think I need to get a better balance.
Okay. And what I would say is doing a financial plan and getting a financial plan done properly will mean I've said this a couple of times and I'm on record saying it lots of times. In fact, sometimes we'd have a couple who would come into us and one of them is exactly like you. I'm worried about the future. Yeah. And I'm not suggesting you're not enjoying today, but it's putting a filter over today. Mm-hmm. It's putting it's distracting you from today because you're worried about the future. And then the other person in the couple will be like, well, actually, we could be all gone tomorrow. Let's just spend it all today. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I don't know if your partner fits into the second category.
Possibly.
Yeah. Okay. But what a good financial plan does is it means that your long-term financial future is looked after. So we take all the big stuff out, right?
Yeah.
Like you put money into a pension, you put money into medium-term savings, you put money into I know you mentioned it before that you use Spaces and Wallets and Vaults and different pockets of money, right?
Yeah.
And so we look after the short, medium and long-term. And when those things are all looked after, it means you get to enjoy today guilt-free. Is the unfair word.
It's the guilt. That's it.
Okay.
I probably feel guilty
about spending. Because you're not 100% sure that the future's looked after.
Well, I think it is, but I guess I'm guessing.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
We don't.
You know, I'm no expert. Yeah.
And why do you think it is, but you don't know? Is that simply because you've never done a financial plan?
I'm putting a lot into my pension, I think.
Okay. Don't give me monetary amounts.
I won't give you.
Yeah, no.
No,
don't give me a monetary. Sorry, you can if you want to. I'm saying.
Yeah, but like there's percentage wise.
What percentage? Have you any idea what percentage you're putting in?
I do. I have 16 going in.
Okay.
And then I have 15 going in from my employer.
Okay. So in total, it's 30% of just over 30% of your wage going in. So you're putting a good chunk in. And have you been doing that?
I think that's good.
Yeah. Have you been doing that for quite some time?
Only since I started listening to you, Owen.
Okay.
Since I started reading the books.
Okay.
And this Parkinson's Law and all this. Because I will spend, that's the problem, you see. I will spend whatever I have.
Okay. So that's actually...
So I need to get rid of it before I spend it.
Okay. But yet when you do spend it, even though it's there and you get rid of it if it's sitting in front of you, you do it with a little bit of guilt.
Yeah.
Okay. And have you ever gone about sitting down and working out, okay, I'm putting a decent chunk in and they're putting a decent, my employer's putting a decent chunk in. Yeah. I should be grand, but I don't know. What stopped you going and finding out what...
Well, I, you know, the financial provider provides, you know, the yeah. future me and all this. And then, you see, I don't know how much I need.
Okay.
I mean, how much do you need? And I mean, I would hope that when I get to, you know, say in 10 years time, I will need less, you know, when the kids are kind yeah. of sorted.
Yeah.
When I'm living in Spain, you know.
And I do think, Anya, that's what we need to map out. Like, you need yeah. to get that mapped out for you and you need
yeah,
to look at it. And
you know, I think it's sufficient, but sure, it mightn't be. And, you know, how long is a piece of string? And that's the thing. I'm guessing.
Yes.
And I'm putting things away and I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I think Revolut has changed, like, has really helped me with my planning.
Tell me about the impact that's had. And you're, when you talk about Revolut, you're talking about the spaces or wallets and what, or
yeah,
vaults and
exactly.
stuff.
I used to just wing it so much.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't really, like, I have kind of, I have pockets for kind of, you know, my tennis membership. It's yeah. it's annual, but it's like, it's in January. So, yeah. you know, I'm now putting that ahead. You
so,
know,
so you'd be ready when that comes in.
Yeah, exactly. And just the house insurance and the car insurance and things like that. And I set up a Christmas one.
Right.
Thanks again to you. I do listen.
Yeah.
I'm your top pupil.
So you have that going along and you're all over yeah. that and it's real clear clarity and it gives you a bit of surety that right when tennis comes around, when Christmas yeah. comes around, I'm going to be
yes.
ready financially. You're actually doing the hard work in terms of you're taking money out of your wages for your long-term pension, but yes, you don't have the clarity you need.
I just feel that I think I'm good. I think there's top, middle or bottom.
Right.
And, you know, I think I'm okay pension-wise. I think that's okay, you know.
Okay.
And I'm getting there with my vaults. It's the in-between. It's the buffer. It's the life happening. I think I'm not so good at that.
Okay. And when you, if anyone remembers your message, one of the things that we laughed at was you said, I was going to book the financial plan with you, but I'd have to stick it on the credit card. That would have been a buffer expenditure, I assume.
Yeah, yes. Okay. And I just wasn't ready for it at the time because I had a few other things, you know.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
I love a bargain. I love an old discount.
Okay.
Well, I'm a great woman to try and get things cheaper, if you know what I mean. I get a kick out of that.
When you have the real short-term stuff looked after and you're certainly not on your way without any clarity, you're on your way for the
yeah.
for the long-term stuff, what's stopping you doing the buffer, putting that together?
You see, where does the buffer start and where does it end? And that's what I get confused with. And I mean, like, if we need to change the car, is that buffer or is that like your long-term savings? That's what I get confused with.
Okay. So the buffer is the place you reach for when you would ordinarily reach for the credit card.
Okay.
If you didn't have a buffer.
Okay.
So it's not about replacing the car. Like, replacing the car is like what you're doing with Christmas and what you're doing with your tennis.
Okay.
Okay. So you change the car today and you say, I've had this car for 5 years. It's after costing me, let's just say, 5,000 euros to change the car to make the math simple. It's likely yeah. we're going to change it again in 5 years' time. I need to save 1,000 euros a year.
Okay.
For that.
So I need to start. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And if the goal, if it's 5 years' time that you change, you're planning on changing the car again, well, then you'd put it into a bank account. If it's a 10 yeah. year goal, we're going to use an investment account because it's the 5 year rule and it's going to be greater
okay.
than five.
Okay. No.
So
that
if you
makes
think
sense.
About that, but I actually think the crux of where I think you're falling over with the buffer is, you see, you should. And this kind of, I know you're the best student in the class, right? But you should really not be saving towards Christmas and tennis when you haven't got your buffer first.
Okay.
Okay. So if you diverted all the Christmas and tennis and any of the other things that you have going on until you got your buffer together for 3 months,
okay.
right? And what happens is every time you dip into the buffer, you learn from that. So you
okay.
say, oh, God, I got here. It's Christmas. I don't have a Christmas pot, right? And I'm going to take it out of the buffer and now I'm going to set up a 12-month thing for the Christmas. Now, I think given the way you're structured it and the fact that you've started out on that route, I would say to you, try and see if you can get both going at the same time.
Yeah.
But
see, I kind of.
Usually the first step is create the buffer and then start setting up the pockets or the wallets or the
okay.
vaults or whatever else after that, because you learn every time you dip into the buffer.
I'm running before I can walk.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You need to get that separated out.
Okay.
When it comes to investing the pension, are you getting great advice on that? And how are you feeling about that?
But sure, I obviously need to look at that because it's provided by my employer.
Yes.
And I signed up to that
yeah.
a long time ago. So And I'm now like it's my 21st with my company next month.
Well, so, okay.
I know. So I probably need to reevaluate and it's probably changed. So I'm not, no, I could do with a review on that, definitely.
I really think, Anya, and
I'd benefit.
You really would benefit from going through
it. I'd benefit from you.
Yeah, going through, because what I think you're trying to do is I think you're trying to do it all yourself. Like there are stats out there that tell us that people who have a financial planner, a good financial planner, have two and a half times the net worth of people who don't.
Yeah.
And I think you're a perfect example of someone who's doing everything right, maybe doing it in a slightly wrong order,
yeah,
but needs to get some structure, some clarity on it. And the payback to you is going to be dramatic because you will then get back to your original crux of your problem, which is what you said at the very start. What keeps you awake at night? You're not really, you're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
You are enjoying it, but you're carrying this little bit of guilt around which at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. You work hard for it. You need to enjoy it, you know, and be sorted. Yeah.
Tell me, Anya, have you any questions for me? You're here in front of me now. You've obviously well schooled yourself in some of the stuff and the books and everything else. Have you any questions for me?
Yeah, like I've loads.
Okay, let's try and get some of them done.
Yeah. I should have written this down.
That's okay.
I never thought you'd ask me. I thought I would just have the verbal diarrhea. I guess the car loans, right. Mm. Okay. The car. So, because I have this long-term investment, like, but I'm paying into that every month. So it's like, it's not easily accessed. So I don't like to touch that.
Yeah.
But like, it's okay to touch that though, if I need to.
Yeah.
You know, it's going in once a month. I'm putting money in once a month. So obviously.
How long has it been going in for? Is it more than 5 years?
Yeah, it
is. Okay. Well, that's exactly where it is. And what if I was looking at all of your finances here, one of the things I'd be saying to you is the buffer is really holding you back. This is about like finances and being in control of your money.
Yeah.
Is about getting sleep. Right. And that's a kind of an extended way of saying you're spending, but you're spending with a bit of guilt. And maybe it might be worth looking at that particular investment. I need to do it. I'm going to use that as my reset. I'm going to take money out of it. I'm going to dump it in and create a buffer there. Right. I'm going to have my buffer now and I'll keep my tennis and my Christmas going.
Yes. Okay. Right? Okay. And don't be afraid. Like I was just afraid to touch that. And that's kind of everything. Because I used to have separate college accounts.
Yes.
But I pooled. We used to have it in the Ompost. And I, listening to you again, I took it all out and I put it in there.
Okay. And that's fine too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I just thought we'd get a better return in the long run on that.
Yeah.
But I think so that should be for the kind of the big things.
Absolutely. Like, what are you saving it for if it's not, like, it doesn't have to stay there forever.
Yeah, that's what I get confused by, I think. I think it needs to be there in the future and I can't touch it because, like, I don't do car loans and I don't want to. So that's what I would, okay. And borrow from yourself, isn't
100%, it? 100%, yeah. And what you might find is if I take this out of the investment, and you might miss out a bit of compounding interest, but if I take cash out of my investment to pay for my car instead of taking a car loan, then what you're doing is you say, that car loan would have cost me, I don't know, €400 a month. Let's increase the savings contribution by €400 a month in order to pay back the loan I just took from myself from my investment.
Okay.
Okay. So, but like what I would say is when you've got the cash sitting in the investment, you do need to decide when's the right time to be taking it out. The beauty you have now is though, because it's more than 5 years old, if it's invested properly, whenever you to take it out, there's the probability of it being in a positive situation is very strong if it was invested right.
Yeah.
And if it's more than 7 years old with a 60-40 portfolio, you will be up. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm still not, the 60-40 still isn't clear in my head. I'm just not getting it. I don't know why. I know, but then that's, yeah.
No, but let's try and explain what a 60-40 means, right? So remember, 60-40 is where you don't have an advisor. Nobody's sitting down and looking at you specifically and you're just trying to DIY it, right? And you just take 60% of your money and you put it into the world stock markets. The entire world, right? Where you buy thousands of companies and those thousands of companies will, you'll own a little bit of them. So you'll own a little bit of Google, a little bit of Tesla, a little bit of Coca-Cola, a little bit of GE, right?
Yeah.
And when they go up in value and the value of that company goes up, you participate in it. When it goes down, you go down. And there's a secondary market there where people sell shares in the companies all the time. And you'll end up with a kind of 10,000 companies is what will be in there. okay? And then 40% of your money goes into a bond and you give a loan of it to companies, and to governments. Now, that's as simple as it needs to be.
Yeah.
And how you execute that is you go to your investment provider, whoever has that investment for you, you go to your pension provider and you say, listen, I just want 60% of my money to go into the world stock markets and I want 40% of my money to go into the world bond markets.
So I can do that with my pension now,
yes,
can I?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
So one of the things that's interesting about you, Anya, is when you're talking to me about your pension, okay, mm-hmm. and if you're not sure how to invest your pension, okay, it sounds to me like you're in a big group scheme and there's loads of you in it, which yes. means there's a provider in the background, which
yeah,
means you
yeah.
should have access to advice specific to you.
Okay.
Okay. You should be able to go to HR or whoever it is and say, listen, I'd love to spend some time with the pension advisor in here, okay, and get some advice and get them to tell me, okay, here's the range of funds that are available, and then say to them, look, I'm chatting to your man, Owen McGee, and he was talking about 60% shares, 40% bonds. How do I do that here?
Okay.
Okay. So you could do it that way. And that means if you're not engaging with an independent financial planner, that is a route that's available to you to at least know that your pension fund is invested in a way that has got historically good returns on it.
Okay. Okay. As opposed to my long-term investment.
Your long-term investment provider, depending on who that is, like if it's a bank that you set it up through, the bank should be able to give you that advice.
Okay.
But that's the beauty of it. One of the things is what you're going to have to do is in silos here. So you're going to have to do the investment and have a chat there, the pension and have
yes,
a chat there.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. By bringing it all into a financial planner, they'll look at all of it for you. And they'll make sure each one they're talking to each other in terms of the pension isn't doing something mad that's actually undoing all the good work you're doing with the investment. Is there anything else you'd like to ask me before we wrap up?
I actually have one quick question. For older people, do you know the way you say all the investment rules are the same?
Yes.
Are they though? Like say somebody in their 80s, would they invest the same as somebody in their 40s?
Yes. Provided. So first of all, if the 5-year rule applies, it applies whether you're 20 or 80.
Okay.
If you're not going to spend the money in the next 5 years, it doesn't belong on a bank account. Okay. But there is another element that needs to be taken into account, which is the required rate of return. Okay. So how much, when we'd sit down with an 80-year-old, right?
Yeah.
We'd assume they're going to die by 100.
Okay.
And where we have a couple at any age, right? If I'm sitting and I'm talking to you and your partner, it doesn't matter what age you are and what your partner are, roughly the statistics are that if we build a financial plan to average life expectancy, which is 84, 85, half of our clients will be 86 alive and broke. Okay. If we only build a financial plan to there, right? Because they'll be above average, they stayed alive. But if I build a financial plan to 100 for you and your partner, there's a 98% chance that if one of you makes 100 years of age, the other one will be dead. Okay. So that means there's a 98% chance my plan is right if I build it to 100 years of age. Okay. So when I'm sitting down with an 80-year-old couple, let's say, and I'm going, okay, you've got 20 years to go to 100 years of age. This is how much you're spending. This is how much you need for all your future expenditure. This is how much cash you have. And I look at it and say, how much return do I need on your cash in order to make sure you don't run out of money before 100? And sometimes, when people are lucky, it might be minus 10%. They could lose 10% a year on it or 17% a year on it. And then you're saying to yourself, look, if we invest it, are you going to lose sleep on it? And if they're going to lose sleep over it, we'll say, don't do it. Okay? Because you can afford to leave it in a bank account, even though we know the rules are that if you're going to leave it in a bank account for more than 5 years, you're going to lose money on it. But these people can afford to lose money. And if they put the money into an investment, they're going to lose sleep over it. The sleep is more important.
Okay,
so
I get you.
The rules are the same. 5-year rule, if you're not going to spend it, you shouldn't leave it in a bank account. Doesn't mean that you won't leave it in a bank account because sleep is more important.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's interesting. It does, because I'm assisting with my mother's finances.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah. No, it's just interesting. I think it's good to know, and it's.
Yeah, it just depends on their overall finances and what position they're in.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anya, we're going to leave it for that for today. I really appreciate you taking the time out and coming back to us.
I really enjoyed this. You know, I'm sorry. I tried to be a bit more professional today than my waffle.
Well, actually, listeners won't know that when we asked you to come on the show, you sent us a back of voice note saying, yeah, I can't believe I listened back to myself and the verbal diarrhea was ridiculous, but we loved it. And that's why you're here. Anya, thank you very much for your time.
And I think, you know what, I'm my buffer will be there now, and I think I will definitely be booking in. So when, and I may even pay full price on, I may go for it.
Okay. Thanks, Sonia.
Thank you so much.
Sarah, you're back with me again this week. Hello. Thanks very much. You've got two questions for us this week.
Yeah.
Will we just jump straight in?
Let's go for it.
Go for it.
Hi, Owen. Hi, team. This is a pension-related question. So I'm a contractor. So that means I don't work 52 weeks of the year. Some years I do, some years I don't. But when I'm working, I pay into the CWPS. When I'm not working, I don't pay into that. Now, as well as that, I pay into a personal pension. I pay a sum of money into that every month without fail. So I have a personal pension and I have a CWPS, Construction Workers Pension Scheme. So I have one of that. So that's two pensions. Is this mental? Am I better off just keeping one pension? Grant, thanks.
Okay, you're probably not familiar with the CWPS.
No.
And just to remind our listeners, Sarah's in marketing.
Yes.
You don't have QFA, you don't have any of that stuff. You've never been in this world before.
No.
But CWPS is the Construction Workers Pension Scheme, I think is what it is. It used to be called the CIF, actually, but it's Construction Workers Pension Scheme, is my understanding of what those letters stand for. And when you're on a job, one of the things you have to be careful of, if this guy was to dump one of his pensions, it's mm-hmm. not mental, by the way, first of all. Like having two pensions.
Yeah.
Pensions typically are charged on a percentage basis.
Okay.
So if you're being charged 1.5% a year on 100K, or you're being charged 1.5% a year on 50 grand in one pot and 50 grand in the other pot, it's still the same amount of money.
Yeah.
There's a slight...
I'd say that's a lot of listeners would have that question in different jobs that would have pension schemes set up.
Yeah.
You know, should they be having two? But it's the same.
It's the same. Like,
there's no fixed amount.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. Now, there's some very, very unusual circumstances where you get charged a bit more.
Yeah.
And some pension schemes might have €8 a year to a levy that has to be paid on them per scheme. But that's €8 a year. Like, it's not going to change your pension pot dramatically. The other thing that this question often gets tied into is I've loads of pensions from previous jobs.
Yeah.
And should I put them all together? I don't agree with putting them all together.
Okay.
Because if you leave them separate, you can draw them down at different times.
Yeah.
And it's a percentage anyway. You're not going to save money. There's no economies of scale by putting them together.
Okay.
The interesting thing for him, if he was to cancel his construction workers pension scheme, the CWPS, there are some jobs, okay, particularly state jobs. My understanding is you won't get onto the job. You won't get the contract if you're not in the CWPS scheme. Now, if someone wants to correct me on that, I'm more than open to correction on it, but that's my understanding. And that was fed back to me by somebody who was in it, who was out trying to get work, particularly state work. And they says, if we're not CWPS, we won't get the job.
Okay.
And he needs to be careful, particularly because he works for himself, that he doesn't cut off his nose to spite his face. And it's percentage based anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it's not, I think he said mad or mental or something is what he said.
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. We go for the next one.
Let's do it.
Hi Owen, I have a question on pensions. I currently work in the private sector. I'm putting away 20% of my salary into a pension each month. My company also matches up to 7%. Because of the group pension scheme, we have a dedicated broker or person that advises on the pension. My question on that is there any questions I should be asking my broker or any advice on how I go about investing that pension? Currently, they have advised that I'll have half my pension sitting in cash, earning, you know, some interest. I have asked them to put a quarter into high risk and a quarter into medium risk, which has done quite well this year, but they keep wanting to advise me to be more risk adverse. And I'm just not quite sure of, you know, what the schemes are or how well they're doing or how well I should manage the money. I am only in my mid-30s, so I want to try and build as much wealth in my pension pot as I possibly can. And I suppose my theory would be to go for the high risk stuff early on in life. And if it ever, you know, takes a dip, I have plenty of time to make that up. So I suppose my question really is, you know, is there a better way to understand all the schemes and all the different investment routes you can go down when it comes to pensions? I find it a bit of a minefield and the information online is not great. Thanks very much. Really enjoyed the podcast.
Well, there's a whole episode on answering that question. Like, there's so much there. What do you think we need to concentrate? What do you think his real question is there?
His real question, I think, is should he be investing in high risk?
Okay.
Okay.
Investments now?
Yeah, investments now. That's fair. So first of all, what I'd say is he's 50% of his money is gone into his cash fund, yeah. Right? He's probably losing money on that, even though the interest rates are going up. He's probably losing against charges. He's probably losing money. 50% in medium risk and 25% medium and 25% high, I think is what he said. That's just a mess, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, and the advisors are telling him to be more risk adverse, was the word. I wonder, did he make a mistake there?
I was kind of shocked at that when I was listening to the question, because it seemed like they weren't listening to his wants and his needs.
Yeah.
Because he seems like he is.
Open to going. Yeah. Yeah. But they want him to turn down the risk volume. Yeah. They're saying risk averse, more risk adverse. They want him to turn down the volume. I think it needs to go the other way.
Yeah.
And I think this is a perfect example of the pensions world, the investment world, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, it's not Prosperous as anybody else's, in my opinion, the investment world and the professionals in it make investing overly complex to create jobs for themselves.
Okay.
it does not have to be this complicated.
Yeah.
Like if that person just went in and said, what are the charges like? So what allocation rate, he did ask at the start, what questions should be asked? What's the allocation rate look like? What are the ongoing charges look like? Yeah. Not getting 100% allocation, he has a problem. If he's not getting in and around 1.5%, if it's a big group scheme, he'll be getting a lot less than that. But in and around 1.5% is acceptable. Okay. Yeah. So they're the charge, 100% allocation, and in and around 1.5% or a lot less if it's a big group scheme. And then what are my investment choices? Okay. Mm. Now, if the charges are astronomical, what I'd be suggesting to someone like that to do is bring his contribution with the work scheme down to 7% so that he gets a 7% matching for work. Yeah. Okay. And with the extra 13% that he's currently put in, go buy a private pension for himself. Right.
Yeah.
It'll have to be what's called a PRSA AVC, but he can do that with any advisor, any broker can set it up for him and just drive the charges down on that 13%. Don't walk away from the free 7% from the company.
Yeah.
Right. Take that, but then do it. But then when he goes to make his investment choices, let's simplify it. Like totally simplify it, right? If he went into a no-brainer 60-40 portfolio, and Sarah, you haven't been working with us too long, so you may not have heard me spout on about this before, but that basically means 60% of his money gets invested in the best companies in the world. He owns, buys tiny bits, buys shares in, and it wouldn't be unusual with a 60-40 portfolio to end up with exposure to 10,000 different companies here.
Yeah.
Okay. So you buy tiny bits with 60% of your money, and 40% of your money goes into bonds, where you give a loan of your money to companies and to governments. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when he looks at that statistically, what will happen is if he leaves it alone for 5 years, he's a 99.6% chance he's going to have a positive return. If he leaves alone for 7 years or 8 years or 10 years or any period of time beyond 7 years, there has never been a period of time beyond 7 years in the last 100 years where you would lose money invested in a 60-40.
Okay.
And this isn't the Prosperous way of it. We kind of pull from that. We do a few other bits and pieces with it, right? But this isn't, I'm not talking about the Prosperous no-brainer 60-40 portfolio. Yeah. I'm just talking about no-brainer 60-40 portfolio. It's a generic thing, right? It's just a style of investing. And what he's done there is he's taken all the risk off the table. He's just completely simplified it for himself. Yeah. He is in his 30s, I think he said, right? So therefore, he can go, there's loads of 7 year periods. There's loads.
Yeah.
He has a 30 plus time horizon here before he retires. And then he has another 40 years to get to until he gets to 100 years of age. This money is going to be invested for the next 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a really simple way of doing it, because he's de-risking the whole thing. He's spreading the risk across thousands of different companies.
Yeah.
And he's simplifying it, which is the most important thing. If he's not going to get decent advice, that's the advice. If he's not going to get decent specific advice for himself, that's the advice I would give him or anybody else there. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple. Yeah. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what I do think, though, there was a really important question he asked in there. Should I put it high risk now and then reduce the risk as I get closer to retirement?
Because I would kind of think that, I don't have any kind of pension set up. I need to probably think about it in the next couple of years. But in my mind, I'm still a teenage girl, and that's like too much for me. I'm like a teenager in my 20s. But I would think
Sarah, you do also, you know what, you need to take a step back and read your employment contract for Prosperous.
I know,
because
I know.
Because you are actually getting one. It's just you don't get it on day one. So just to be everyone's out there going, doesn't he give people jobs and then doesn't give them a pension? Him of all people. You are
going sorry,
to,
yes, yes.
So you will be
disclaimer,
get this.
Yes. But I would think that makes a lot of sense to me, would be invest high risk when you're younger, because it's not your money that you're going to need in the next 5 years that you're playing around with.
So the more risk you take, the more potential return you can expect. Yeah. Okay, that makes absolute sense. Yeah. And the thing about it is that most people, though, when they go really high risk, when they look at it, they get very scared and they pull the plug on it. Mm-hmm. They just move it all to cash. Jeez, yeah. I lost lots of money and move it all to cash, right? Yeah. So that's why 60-40 is a bit of a smoother ride, and it's less likely the person's going to do the wrong thing at the wrong time for the wrong reasons, okay? And that's why when you don't have an advisor in your corner, that's the easier one to go with, okay? But one of the things that I've no major concerns with someone who knows what they're doing and knows it's going to be up and down and all over the place, and they know they're not going to need the money for a long time.
Yeah.
I have no major concerns going high risk or higher risk, okay? My issue with what he said was to de-risk it later on, okay? So there is a thing out there called glide path, or target dated funds is what they often called, right? But glide path fund is a nice way to describe it. What happens with a glide path fund is as you approach retirement, it starts to reduce the risk that's in your fund. It does it automatically for you. So it might move 20% a year for the last 5 years before retirement. And what happens then is the day you retire, you now have the least amount of risk on the table.
Yeah.
So that if the markets blow up the year before you retire, you won't get a big shock on the day you retire.
Yeah.
The problem with it is that the day after you've retired, you're now 65, and you've got now all of a sudden you've got a 35-year time horizon for yourself again. And you're going, if I leave this all in low risk, my money's not going to last to 100 years of age.
Yeah.
And we always pick 100. There's a reason, right?
Yeah.
Just a statistical reason why we built a plan to 100 years of age. So what you have to do is you have to load the risk back up on it again. And they're called glide paths because it's like a plane. It comes into landing, right? Yeah. Just before you retire, so you're safe on the ground.
Yeah.
But then the day you retire, you have to take off again, right? What's the riskiest part of flying? Take off and landing.
Yeah.
When you pull in all of that risk on yourself the day you retire, remember that when you're 30, you have 70 years to go to 100 years, years of age. When you're 60, you have 40 years to go. It's not this big D-Day that people think it is. Yeah. There is reasons why you want to protect your money just before retirement, but it's not a big deal, right? Yeah. And get good advice on that. I'm not a fan of target dated or glide path funds. I am a fan of getting good, proper, specific advice for yourself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Was that a bit of a whistle-stop tour for you in terms of pensions and stuff? for the teenager inside you, Sarah.
Like, Sarah, come on.
Come on, drag you into adulthood, Sarah.
Sarah, I'm fighting it with all my strength.
Tell me about the questions you'd like to get in. Tell us about the questions that you're looking for. Are you looking for generic stuff? Do you want specific stuff?
Yeah. Well, I just think people looking for advice like that, I think questions like that are really good because I'm sure there's people out there. And the first question, having two pensions, like I'd say a lot of people have questions like that. So even if you're an everyday person and you don't have massive, major financial crisis or anything going on and you just want some advice, we'd love to hear it and we'd love to, you know, help people out. But then also, we'd love if you have other stuff going on and you would love specific advice on specific scenarios.
Okay, so you're happy to take generic stuff, you're just across
whatever,
or specific. And we're also looking for people to suggest that they come
on themselves
as a guest.
Yeah.
And I do think the real people make a difference, don't
they? Yeah.
And you're reaching out to a lot of them and you're talking to them and you're kind of collating them all together and say, right, this one drops into that episode and that one drops into that episode.
Yeah.
How do people get in touch with you?
So get in touch with us via WhatsApp and voice note, please. We would love to hear all of our listeners. And the number is 087-291-0507. And also if you have any suggestions of topics you'd like to hear covered.
Great. If anyone's watching this instead of listening to this,
they'll
notice that you and I looked down there a minute ago, didn't we? Because you still haven't written up.
I will. The next episode, I'll be looking up.
And you know what it is. Okay,
I have a tattooed on my arm or something.
Sarah, thank you very much for coming in. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. When you think back over the episode, what did we get from it? We got a great chat with Anya. We got to meet her again. But really, for me, the crux of what's going on for Anya is she's doing all the right things, but maybe not in the right order. And she could really do with some guidance. And I know there's going to be certain people who are listening to this podcast going, of course he'd say that. He's a financial planner. I will say, of course I'm a financial planner. Of course, as a financial planner, I'm going to say that because me and other financial planners out there, we believe in what we do. And we don't do it to make things worse for people. We do it to make things better for people. And I'm not going to apologize for when it's blatantly obvious in my face that somebody is going to be so much better off, not just financially, but in terms of sleep at night and everything else, because they engage with a financial planner. I just think that that is something that has to be called out. We had a couple of pensions questions today. Pensions is one that keeps coming up and up and up again, and we did cover it in season one. We might go back there soon. I can't stress to you enough how important it is for us to have real people. We call them in here in the team, we call it real people and professional people. And the real ones are the ones that really make the shows better. If you have a story you want to tell us, please get in touch with the show. Let us know what your story is. And then a couple of weeks time, you could be sitting here. We could be having a chat and the episode will be all about you. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon.